This is The Food Fix, a podcast where we talk to researchers and innovators about how to better feed the world. Welcome or welcome back to The Food Fix. As always, I'm your host, Taylor Holterman. This is an exciting episode because we're talking about something we've never talked about on the podcast before. And I'm recording the episode in a way I've never done before. Remote from Belgium. I know that sounds like a glamorous experience, but the reality of it is me sitting under the comforter on my bed with my microphone to get decent acoustics, while my roommate sits next to me trying not to make any noise. Literally right next to me, they pushed two twin beds together to fit two people in this room. But regardless, I'm lucky and excited to be here and to be hosting the podcast. Anyway, today we're talking about seaweed. More specifically, how leftover water from the food industry can be used as a fertilizer in land-based seaweed growing to make it grow both faster and contain more protein. Christopher Stett is a PhD student in the Department of Marine Sciences at the University of Gothenburg, and he is the lead author of the study that found these results. It was published in the journal Algal Research. Christopher, thanks for being here. To be honest, I don't think much about seaweed as a food source outside of the occasional grocery store sushi, and I especially don't think of it as a source of protein. When I think protein, I think chicken, eggs, or even a plant-based burger. Why is seaweed important to study this way? And how protein-dense is it compared to other options?
As I'm sure you are aware of and the listeners are aware of, we will be approximately 10 billion people on the Earth by 2050, which means that we need to produce a lot more food. So, I mean, there is increasing demand for proteins and proteins that are sustainably produced. And I mean, this means that we need to reduce the consumption of animal-produced proteins. And we like to call this the protein shift, where we rely more on sustainable vegetable protein sources. Seaweeds, they have high productivity compared to many land-farmed crops. They have also this favorable amino acid profile. They do not require arable land or freshwater supply or high input of nutrients to grow. Everything is already in the water. Maybe the drawback with seaweeds right now is that if you compare it to soybeans, for example, which is probably the most popular vegetable protein source that we're using right now, it's a little bit lower. We like to group them into three different groups. So we have brown, green, and red seaweed species. And generally speaking, we can say that the brown seaweeds, they have the lowest protein content at around 5 to 10%. And then green have a little bit higher, 15-20% maybe, and then red around 20-25%.
While we're at it, let's also cover the other main topic of the study, food production process waters. What are those?
Water is used in almost every step of food processing. And for some seafood, which is what we're specifically looking into, up to 50 cubic meters of processed water is used per ton of final products. These are outlet waters, and they have a wide range of nutrients that can be tapped off while they're still in this food grade state. We don't really like to call it wastewaters. It's wastewaters, but we like to call it process waters because we want to show that you can actually use it for something else. It's not only waste. There's a lot of nutrients in the water that we can circulate back to the food chain.
You tried several different types of water too. They came from oat milk production, the herring industry, salmon farming, and shellfish processors. Are some of these more effective than others?
They were more or less the same, actually. But of course, all of these waters are marine waters, except the oat milk production, which is a freshwater. So, I mean, if you want to scale this up, maybe this water is not the best to use, because then you actually have to add salt in the water to get the seaweeds to grow, because we are only looking into marine seaweed species. We tested four different seaweed species. three different green seaweed species, and they all performed very well in these waters. But we also tested a brown seaweed species called Saccharina latissima, which is a kelp, and it didn't cope in the waters. So we have this opportunistic green seaweed species, and they can cope really well in it because they're more adjusted to different environmental parameters that it changes. But this kelp species, they are more they want a more stable environment, and maybe this boost of nutrients to their waters, for some reason they didn't really like it.
You found that you can use this food process water as a fertilizer to make the seaweed grow faster and increase the protein content. How does that happen?
Yeah, I mean it's kind of like fertilizer on land. You add it to fields with whatever you grow on land to make it grow faster, for example. So I mean it's the same for the seaweeds. They need nitrogen, they need phosphorus, they need carbon to grow. And usually they are limited in the water by the nitrogen. So if we add more nitrogen, they will grow faster, and then they will also accumulate the nitrogen and so in this case we use ammonium, and then they assimilate it and they use it to make proteins and amino acids. So if you put in more ammonium, you get more proteins.
Now, the question on everyone's mind, or at least the first thing that came to mind when I read the study, does it taste like seaweed grown the traditional way? Because even if the additional protein tempts me, I can't imagine seaweed that tastes like oats would be the most appetizing option with my sushi.
Yeah, it's a really good point. So we've actually had a sensory analysis of these seaweeds. So we had a sensory panel that tested like their appearance, odor, taste, flavor, and texture. But this test panel, they didn't see any difference in the taste whatsoever, which is really good, I think. The only thing they saw was actually the color that the seaweeds. So this is for green seaweed species. So they turned a little bit more olive green, a little bit more green, if you can say that. So and this probably correlates to that they have higher proteins and more chlorophyll.
Greener seaweed doesn't seem like it would affect anyone's appetite either. If anything, the more green something is, the healthier I feel when I eat it, and that's always a good feeling. Please don't leave us hanging. What's next with this research? Is there potential for it to be widely used someday?
Yeah, well, I'm hoping for that, of course. Naive PhD student, but I mean now we are scaling up the experiments. We have decided to move forward with one seaweed species called Ulva fenestrata. It's sea lettuce, and then to only focus on two of these process waters. So we're focusing on process waters from the herring industry and this sea lettuce, and then scaling it up to see if it works. Also, when you put it more, because everything we've been doing so far is pretty small scale. If you compare it to if you want it to be in an industry, for example, and then I wish that I have time in my PhD to also move everything to one of the companies and see if we can integrate it there. But yeah, for now, I think we need to conduct more tests in larger volumes. That's the first step.
That's everything I wanted to cover today. Thanks so much, Christopher, for being a part of the podcast. And for anyone interested in learning more, the study is linked in the description of this episode.
Bye. Thank you for having me.
Now that we've reached the end of this seaweed-focused episode, I think it might be time for me to remind myself what it tastes like and find some sushi for dinner. But before that, I want to thank you so much for tuning in, and to let you know that we release a new episode every Tuesday at 5 a.m. The next episode takes us back to a city we've discussed before, Baltimore. But this time we're talking about a project that's planted over 2,000 fruit trees across the city, and harvested 16,000 pounds of produce. You can join me right back here for that episode on Tuesday, June 21st, if you're interested in hearing more. And if you're interested in finding out where in the world I'll be recording from next. Here's a hint, it doesn't start with a B, so Belgium and Baltimore are both out of the question if you want to turn this into a guessing game. Until then, you can follow us and reach out on Facebook and Twitter at MSU Food Fix to join in on the conversation. This podcast is brought to you by Michigan State University's Knight Center for Environmental Journalism, and I've been your host, Taylor Holterman. You've been listening to The Food Fix.